Gang, it's the end of 2018, and maybe your New Year's resolution is to make your band better. Well, if you want to take the leap from the band of schmoes to the band of pros, you start by rehearsing, and Space is the best place to do that. Space is a state-of-the-art, affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. You can find them at 512-448-9518 or go to spaceatx.com. That's right, man. Space is a great place to rehearse. Take the talent drain from Schmoesville to Pro Town with Space. Let's get down.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host, Tom Howdy.
When we talked.
All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you've all had a good week, the last week of 2018. This is the last show of 2018. I'd like to thank you all for listening. I hope you've all had a great 2018. I've had a good 2018, man. Wasn't bad. Hope you guys had a good Christmas. I had a good Christmas. Wasn't bad. I went and saw my family. I stayed there from Saturday until Tuesday at my grandma's house till Christmas Day. And then I come home Christmas Day, chill out, have some quiet time just amongst myself. So yeah, good Christmas. I hope that you guys all had a good Christmas too. Gang, if you're listening to this today, the day that it comes out, Friday, December 28th, 2018, Skyrocket is playing tonight at Mercer Street Dance Hall in Dripping Springs, Texas. Quick note, gang, if you saw us there last time, the place has moved. So Google that and find out where it is because it's in a different location. It's no longer on Mercer Street. It's in a different place. If you have tickets to our New Year's show Monday night in Houston, the last night of Fitzgerald's, congratulations. That show is sold out. So I'll see you guys Monday, those of you that have tickets. If not, sorry about that, gang. It's a popular night because it's the last night of Fitzgerald's. It's Skyrocket New Year's. The stars are aligning for a sellout show. All right. I hope that you guys all had a great year again. I had a really good year. I have no problem with 2018, really. It wasn't like a terrible, terrible year for me. So hopefully we can all make 2019 a prosperous year in all ways, health-wise, financially. What you're doing in the world, your place in the world, that's a thing that we all got to start thinking about more. It's getting more dire. Am I recycling? Am I not driving when I don't need to? You know what I mean? I got to do it too, man. We all do. I got a great show for you guys today. Last show of the year, an amazing Eastern soul singer named Nagavalli is here. Yeah, that's right. We have a fantastic conversation. Her brand new album, Immersion, drops January 15th, 2019. It was produced by John Neese and Don Harvey, the fabulous Don Harvey. The album is absolutely fantastic, and it was recorded as one continuous take. However, she's managed to carve out a single of it, and you'll hear it here on the show in just a minute. So you can find her at nagavalli.com. She's having a release show Sunday, January 20th at One World Theater. Doors are at 6:30. Show is at 7 p.m. Go to nagavalli.com for all of your Nagavalli needs. Now listen, gang, I hope you have a great new year. Hope you have a safe new year. I hope that you ring in 2019 the best way you possibly can. I know I will. I'll be playing at a place that I've been playing for 30 years, and it'll be the last night of that place. And my band will be the last band that's ever on that stage before it gets torn down and becomes condos like everything else in the world. One day this whole world is just going to be condos. That's what I think. Maybe that'll be 2019. 2019, let's stop condos for a little while. We don't need any more, I don't think. Enjoy my conversation with this amazingly talented and immensely fascinating artist, Nagavalli, who grew up in Mumbai, India. Her new record, Immersion, drops January 15th. One continuous track. Unbelievable. Go to nagavalli.com. I hope you guys have a great New Year's and enjoy my conversation with this brilliant artist, Nagavalli. Let's get down.
Genie re,
Something shows, and you'd think that
750
something, like wow. 55.
How long have you been doing this?
7 years, a little over 7 years? 7 years. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's more than
so
100.
I put out like 104 shows a year. Yeah. Sometimes a little more.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
It's quite something.
Thanks.
It's a podcast.
It's a podcast. Yeah. People can listen to it. Yeah. I'd like to start off with this one thing. You are from Mumbai.
Yes.
Okay.
I grew up there.
You did?
Yeah.
Where do you go for Indian food here in town? Hit me to the cool places.
So, well, I'm vegetarian.
Okay.
So I have some favorite vegetarian places here.
What about just straight up Indian food? Do you know what
Indian
the
vegetarian
real stuff
places?
Is?
I go to Bombay Express up north.
Okay.
There is Swad on Lamar.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, for the more curry based Punjabi food and all, I still like Claypit.
Where's that?
On Guadalupe. It's one of the probably the older Indian restaurants in town.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe I've eaten there at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's in downtown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I like the new Tarkas that have come in town too.
Okay.
And then, but it has just blown up, you know, the number of restaurants.
It really has.
Yeah, I moved here in late 2000.
Okay.
There's such limited restaurants, and now it's over 50 restaurants in town is what I've heard.
Did you move here from Mumbai? Or you moved from some other city in the States?
I went to grad school in Florida State.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
FSU.
Yes.
Sweet.
Yeah, I was there for 2 years.
Good.
And then I moved to Austin for a job, actually.
So you moved from Mumbai to Florida?
Yes.
What is that, Gainesville, FSU?
Tallahassee.
Tallahassee.
Yeah.
It's not as backwoods. It's a little more government-y,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
Because the capital's there and the...
It's funny, but I joke that coming from Mumbai, it was a reverse culture shock.
Oh, my God.
Going to Tallahassee because it's a...
I can only imagine.
Smaller town, mostly,
yeah.
I mean, huge school and mostly, you know, government buildings and whatnot. And here I came from Mumbai, you know, I grew up in an academic campus, but then the last couple of years that I spent in Mumbai, I was going to school in the city.
Uh-huh.
So I would be in the public transportation, right? The local trains and the buses. And it's a very fast moving city.
So, then you go to the south.
And then I went to the south. That was my first introduction to US of A.
Yeah.
but I think for school it was lovely. Yeah.
What'd you go to school for?
You know, I came here for a PhD program in physics.
Oh.
And I quit though within 1 year, or I spent about a year in that department and started working with a professor in the summer. But my heart was not quite there, you know, so I went and got another master's degree in information systems, and as soon as I could, got out of school and got into this whole work world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of work is, what's information systems? Is that like
my day job is in technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. Okay. So you came to Austin in 2000, started doing music then. When did you meet AJ? And those guys, the Vallejos?
Probably around 2009.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, coming into Austin, I knew this was a music town, and I always knew that I wanted to continue singing. I grew up learning classical music in India, but I didn't know how I would pursue it here. So I just kind of walked in blind in some ways, and, you know, we'll eventually get there.
Right.
First couple of years, I was just in and out of the scene, just sitting in with Oliver Rajamani, maybe recording a little bit with another artist, but that's about it. That was my only connection for a long time, and but I was writing my own music,
and
wanted to get that out. I started playing some of that music to Susie Stern, mm-hmm. The jazz vocalist.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and she kind of also encouraged me to play play outside, play that music outside. And so finally I kind of started finding some players and putting a band together. And somewhere in that process around 2008, 2009 actually, is when I met AJ. I went into the studio to do a little piece for on Candy Sanders' song.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I first got
introduced.
That's
how you met AJ Vallejo.
Yes,
yeah.
through Jacob Gonzalez.
Okay, yeah. It's a tight scene, this scene. How did you find that? Because it's like a family. So I was going through your Instagram today, and I was like, oh, she's friends with Candace. She's friends with AJ and Alex. She worked with AJ. You know what I mean? Like, well, it's all just like a family of people.
Yes. Yeah.
Does that feel good when you got here and got into that scene where you're like, this is cool. This is like, maybe you don't miss home as much. Or maybe you feel a little more at home.
Yes, definitely. And I mean, working with AJ on that first album was, and of course I've released a couple of singles afterwards with him. I mean, it was a great experience. You know, it was like kind of finding some home finally, right?
Yeah,
I think, you know, I can be pretty picky about how I record my music and it's just, we vibe really well with AJ, you know, AJ and myself in the studio.
He's a great writer, co-writer too.
And you know, he's also patient with my own, you know, quirks and
the people though that he has to deal with their quirks. He's almost like a
saint. Yes.
Don't tell him I said he's a saint.
Well, it depends on whether you put this in a podcast or not. No, it was great working with him, and I just loved the experience. You know, I still go into the studio. I did a Joni Mitchell cover with him in the last 2 years or so.
Heard that. Yeah,
yeah, and another, you know, couple of original singles. So,
So I like all the music that you've made. That's come out.
Thank you.
But the thing that really blew me away is Immersion, your newest album.
Because
it feels like you're not going for trying to mix. It felt like you were mixing a lot of different styles before, which isn't bad. It's great. I'm not like a learned Eastern music person, but I like most white pop kids, I got into it through, you know, Beatles songs that were influenced by it. And then you find out about Ravi Shankar. You start finding out more about him. Then in the 90s, I know he's Pakistani. He's not Indian, but Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, who's also Sufist as well. And I started learning about all that stuff. And it did influence my music in a way where I did write a lot of songs that were not a lot, but good number of songs that were monotonal because I loved that ability to, once a chord is going on, to me it doesn't get old, it puts you in a trance state, which is what your one song album, which is like 48 minutes long, obviously you're not looking to get any radio play on this.
You know, I'm putting actually kind of few singles out of it though.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
No, but
as a piece.
I did. It was meant to be recorded. I was working with Don Harvey on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the intent was to record it as one piece because I wanted it to be a meditative album. I mean, the fusion in this album, there is an element of it, but it comes from the instrumentation,
right?
Because we put some synth and piano, and there's a pedal steel in that. So that's where the fusion element comes in.
It's Gary Newcomb on that, right?
Gary Newcomb Stefano
Intellisano. One of my favorite dudes.
They were just awesome. And Stefano kind of, and they all got into it, right? When they came to the studio, they're kind of listening to that whole, you know, the scratch recording for the first time almost. And they just sat there, and once they got into it, they played for the 40-45 minutes continuously as well.
God, that is so cool.
And so it was just so organic how the whole thing came together. Of course, you know, there was still some track recording and all that, but it was just pretty organic and how that came together. And so
it's beautiful.
And you know, I think and I hope that also lent itself to that meditative feel on how these guys came in and played on that record. And But it was more of a back to roots album for me.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, and it feels like a very. It just feels like this is where I'm from album.
Yes. Right. And when I was recording Eastern Soul, I always had this in my mind, in the back of my mind, that this would be the second album. You know, I would record music, meditative or devotional, spiritual Indian music as my next album.
Right.
I did spend a crazy amount of time completing this, almost five or 6 years.
I bet it was really hard.
I feel like I sat on it for a while.
Yeah.
But, well, here it is. Yeah.
How was it working with my man, Don Harvey?
Don, yeah. You know, I got introduced to Don when I was putting that first album out because we shared a publicist.
Okay.
Joe Ray. And,
oh, yeah. And love then, Joe Ray.
Yeah. And then I happened to sit in on one of his A.S. Red sets.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then since then, I've been joining them every time I can to just improvise as a vocalist with his band.
Yeah.
So at some point of time, I mean, we've definitely have built a good relationship and a good friendship. And again, you know, I don't necessarily, even with Don or even with AJ before, I don't necessarily look for, you know, do they know everything about Indian music. Well, I don't know everything about Indian music, but do they have the same background?
Right.
But it's more the musicality,
right?
You know,
right.
If we can connect on, if we are on the same wavelength about the musicality,
right.
and also just how they are as human beings, to be very honest.
Yes,
you know, that's the other thing.
The
you know, can you? Yeah, can yeah. you work with them in a studio? You know, peacefully, right? And enjoy the experience. And that's really so important.
That's, I look at that exactly like that. Like, I'm like, can I sit in a room for 10 hours at a time with this person?
Yeah.
That's what I got to know.
Totally, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
because, I mean, I've not had any crazy bad experiences, but, you know, once or twice you would learn in a studio sometimes where, you know, people are irritated or whatever. And I just don't like working in that kind of an environment. So that was also a factor in working with these specific people. It's just, I mean, it's just so, such good energy in the studio to work with them.
Yeah.
So that's how we ended up, Don and I ended up working together on this album. And it's been great. And he's the one who actually brought in Gary Newcomb.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen kind of slide guitar, I'm not specifically sure if it was
steel.
A pedal steel, but I've seen other...
Or lap steel or something.
I've seen lap steel and all being used in some fusion music with Indian music.
Really?
In the past, yeah.
Seems like it would work.
But yeah, I mean, it was definitely... I was not completely convinced.
Yeah.
I hope Gary doesn't hear this now. But yeah, I mean, it was not an instrument that I had particularly considered. And then Don said that it would sound awesome. Let me bring this guy
in.
He was right. He was right. I mean, he was so right, yeah.
Yeah, it's really dreamy.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, and especially once it clicked, right? For a moment, you know, he was trying things.
Sure.
And then it clicked and it was like, can you please go and do that all over the album now?
Yeah.
You know, playing that style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who all played the percussion stuff and all of the rhythm?
Jason McKenzie played some tablas and really this, a lot of the tracks don't particularly have any much active percussion going on, right? I mean, it's there, but it's on the lower side, I guess. But Jason McKenzie played some tablas.
It's pretty traditional sounding, the tabla playing.
Yes, it is.
And I know that. You know Nina
Singh? And he played
Singh?
The kanjira. Yes.
Okay. So she's got, you know her, you know she's got a brother?
No.
Like a brother, like me and Nina, I think, are around the same age. I think her brother might be either a little bit older or a little bit younger, but he's like a guy that was studying tabla.
Mm.
And like I would talk to her about it. So like, man, we should get him over here. She's like, oh, no, you don't understand. When you do that, you study for like 40 years and then you go play. And I was like, that's insane. Like what? That's worse than medical school. Are you crazy?
Yeah, I mean, it's you can go to probably the same with classical music here. I'm not sure. I'm not too...
I don't know, man.
I don't understand it well enough, but... Any form of classical arts back in India, it takes years. And even the masters will basically say they don't know everything and they're still learning.
Of course.
So, yeah. And Shiv Nayampally, another Indian tabla player, artist in town, he kind of helped us build up a quick tabla loop
right.
On one of the tracks.
Oh, that's cool.
And Jason played another Indian instrument, a South Indian percussive instrument called the kanjira, and which is my absolute favorite, and I hope to use it in my next show. So he played that on one of the songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw on, like, there were photos of you playing at Wonder One Bar.
Mm.
And
I love that place.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great place, right? It's funny. I'm thinking about this because this happens to me doing this show now. Like, there are people I've probably been around for years. Like, you and I play in the same places. We hang out with the same people, but we've never met.
Yes.
That's weird.
But I've always known your name. We are on Facebook. And
yeah. Are we friends on Facebook?
Yes, we are.
It's a small world now, isn't it? Anyway, you were playing with what looked like a traditional band.
Yes.
Like a drummer, a guitar guy, a bass guy, a keyboard guy.
Yeah. Not a keyboard, but yeah, guitars,
okay,
bass, drum.
Maybe I made up keyboard
DJ
myself.
Crash spins with me.
Okay, that's what
sometimes.
I thought was, okay.
Yes.
So, how is this going to work differently? Like, when you perform this, you're doing a release show on Sunday, January 20th at One World Theater. Doors are at 6:30. Show is at 7 p.m. Go to nagavalli.com and get hooked up with the tickets there. But when you do that show, are you performing Immersion in its entirety?
No. I'm planning to perform from my broader repertoire.
Okay.
So basically, I will be presenting some songs from the album. And I will have Indrajit, who played sitar. He's going to be on the show. Jason McKenzie on percussion. So I will be doing music from Immersion, but not as a continuous piece. And I am also going to bring my band and do the other, what I call Eastern Soul music that I write. This blend of kind of pop rock and Eastern overtones.
So you're going to
I'm going to do it all. Yes, that's the goal. And I'm still working on how I'm going to put all that together.
I was just making sure that I could make it to the show.
I hope so.
I can. I'm in Pittsburgh the week before.
That's
so
awesome.
I'm good. But my idea of the show, for some reason, I was on the trail today and I listened to it in its entirety. I did when Tyler first sent it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I want her to come on the show for sure. And then
thank you.
When I was walking today, I was like, oh, maybe she'll do the show as this and then do some of those other songs as an encore. But I'm not your manager.
You know, I have thought about it, that as well in several, a couple of different ways of doing, putting the show together. And first of all, it's One World. So, I just love that venue so much. And I was like, what would I like to play there if I was just doing a show?
That's true. Yeah.
I just felt like I wanted to present this, kind of present to the audience almost the entire range of music that I play.
Yeah.
So I figured I would start with some of the music from Immersion, of course, because that's the main purpose of the show is to put that or release that album.
Of course,
right?
Yeah.
And slowly move into some of the other music that I write as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I call it all Eastern Soul.
Yeah.
That's what I came up with. I like calling everything that I do Eastern Soul, because even when I'm playing at one-to-one, there is some spiritual music from India that I incorporate into the set.
Yeah.
So I'm used to mixing that stuff up anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's another thing we have in common.
Yes.
Sila. And Sila did
yours. Ah, yes, of
great,
course.
Yeah,
yes.
Great drawing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really love that picture.
Yeah, I love
the
yours.
Painting
that she
made. Yeah.
She did one of my dog. I don't know if you can see it.
Oh,
it's on my fridge. Yeah. Like a painting of a Doberman. I don't know if you can see it. Yeah. Yeah. She's an amazing artist.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah.
You ever get to sing with her?
No.
No.
You know, it's interesting. It's kind of what we talked about, right?
Yeah.
I have known off Sela from a long time.
Yeah.
And I saw her play probably once or twice. Actually more than that in the past, but we never really connected in person, basically. And but it's funny because I think there's such few, like, Indian musicians, like, in the scene.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, in the live music scene. Yeah. I see her name and I almost behave like I know her from a long time on Facebook. And we were laughing about that the other day because we eventually actually met in person when she was playing at 1-to-1. And I was like, I know we have not met, but on Facebook, if you see sometimes my, you know, it's like we're friends through Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it's you. Nina's Canadian. I mean, she's Indian, but she's Canadian.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I honestly don't know where Sheila comes from, too. I just made an assumption just knowing her name.
Yeah.
Sheila Misra. I mean, I'm like, God, that's got to be some connection to India.
So do you cook Indian food? No.
Sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. If I'm too busy with work and music and everything, I will generally, you know, get lazy about cooking.
Yeah.
But I do like to cook for people. Okay. If I have folks over or invite some friends over and cook. Yeah.
I'm Cuban, so there's like that thing where you like, you miss your food. You know what I mean?
Yes.
The flavors of your food.
Yes. Thankfully, there are some good Indian restaurants in town, and that's how I compensate, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because there are a couple of places in town. I'm like, that's like my second kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where else do you play other than 1-to-1 and One World? And other places that start with the word one.
I played at Central Market. You know, I've played at the old Strange Brew in the past.
Oh, right.
I started out playing at Cactus Cafe and Momo's. I used to play at Momo's quite a bit. Yes.
See, we didn't even see each other there.
I did my first gig at... I can't remember the exact sequence, but I played at Vipin, Cactus, and then after that, I played at Momo's a lot. So really, the first couple of years, I think that's where I was playing mostly. And recently played a Kirtan, a meditative music festival in California. I just got booked to play there again next year.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I was going to ask
if
you travel with your music much.
Some. I do work full
when you
time.
Can. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, that's definitely the aspiration. So, trying to put things in place to get there.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's not easy, is it?
It's not. It's not. I mean, being an indie artist, and very honestly, it's taken me time, or I've taken my own sweet time to figure how to, you know, find my way around the scene. I think coming from outside, coming from another place, and you know, just even finding the courage to get in and do my thing took me a lot. It took me a long time. Yeah, so I'm happy with where I am and what I'm doing, and definitely have aspirations to take this forward.
It's a very welcoming scene, but before you're in it,
it
is hard to crack.
It is. It is. And I don't know. And I say this is because, I'm coming from another country so I kind of probably felt like an outsider. But it could very well be even true for somebody who's trying to, you know, break in from here, right? I mean, I don't know their truth, but it was definitely, I had to get over some mental barriers first, right? And then, because even, I mean, playing in a club or a coffee shop was just not in my realm of things, because where I come from, the idea was, you know, hey, you do some playback singing for some movies, or you sing classical music or something else in an auditorium.
That's it.
I mean, it's a growing scene in India right now, you know, some of the Indian music and all that, but not when I was, I mean, my folks wouldn't even allow me to go to a club. It was too forward, you know, So, I mean,
wasn't ladylike to go to a club. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. First of all, it was not much of a scene there at all. And when I did go to my undergrad school, which was quite a quote unquote westernized school. I remember one time my friend called my dad and asked for permission to get me to a dance club or something. And it was like, no, she's got to study. I wasn't allowed to go. So, and not that I grew up in a crazy conservative family, because I mean, that's at another level. I actually grew up in a pretty cosmopolitan environment, but it was still not, this was still not our thing. So that itself was a bit of a shocker, like so, you know, if I want to play here, this is where you go. Right.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love it now, but It definitely
was a culture.
I had to overcome that, and then Then, you know, some resistance from, I mean, they always loved that I'm pursuing music, but definitely there was apprehensions back home on me getting into, you know, hey, she's singing in a band, it might be too forward.
She's like in a nightclub. Yeah, yeah, like, what
even,
are you doing?
I don't actually even play a lot of super.
You're charging
hardcore
people to come watch you in a nightclub. What are you doing?
It was probably not that, but even just, just the idea of a club, right? And then, you know, being in a band with a bunch of guys and all that. I mean, it was, yeah, it took me a bit. It took me a bit. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, what there was that, and then of course the practicality of finding the right people and finding gigs and, you know, how do you get in? So yeah, I mean.
How do you feel now? Do you feel at home and very
last
good
couple
about
of years
where you are? Yeah.
So last couple of years, yes, you know, and it's been a process. Yeah. For a while, honestly, I've felt like a lone warrior, you know.
Well,
probably a lot of people feel that way. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, the cool thing, I think, artistically, in the scene that you're in, you very much are. I mean, you are. I mean, you might have a team behind you, and you might have a band and stuff, but there is nobody else that's doing what you're doing, which to me is awesome.
Thank you. Thank you for putting it that way. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank
well,
you.
I
appreciate
that.
That's very encouraging.
Yeah,
yes.
That can be very lonely.
It can. Yes. I mean, it's a double-edged thing in some ways because, yeah, I mean, yeah. But, you know, when I was first writing in English, because I can write songs only in English, lyrics, and I was trying to make them sound like very Western, and every time I would write a melody, this is how it would come out.
Right, right,
and
right.
I was like, why resist? You
yeah,
know, just
yeah.
just go with it, right?
Yeah.
And then, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah. The Lone Warrior thing, I just want to clarify. Yeah, I mean, you're starting out and trying to, and your friends mostly are not into the scene, you know, at least the friends at that time. So yeah, I mean, it felt a little lonely trying to figure it out all by yourself. But
yeah.
But then, you know, I've found people. I've found AJ. I've found, you know, all these wonderful musicians that play with me now. And in the last couple of years, I think last 2 years or so, you know, Eliza Gilkison asked me to open for her.
Yeah.
And just the support, you know, that I've been seeing. I sometimes jump on stage with Ginger Lee.
Yeah.
I remember one time I was playing at 1-to-1 and Patrice Pike was playing after me and she put her time an hour early so people would come out and listen to me.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and so many artists, you know, I mean, Noel and Jamie Harris, all these guys just appreciating, and Susanna Schofield and all, just appreciating, just a line on Facebook or something, appreciating your work, and that itself gives you such a feeling of belonging to the community here,
yeah.
Right? And all that has made, it's just made a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All those people are great people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've known, my mom was friends with Eliza.
Mm.
And so I've known her since I was like 12 or 13. Natalie Zoe as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Natalie Zoe and Candy, both of them I know through AJ.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That whole gang. Yeah.
Yeah.
We used to do shows together around the time I released that first album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Natalie's a special person. So is Candy.
Yes.
Most people. Very, very...
great artists. Yeah.
Great artists. Great people.
Yeah.
Eliza. Natalie's playing again, right?
Natalie's playing again.
Okay. I need to get her on the show. That's weird that she's not been on the show.
Yes, she started playing again. I am yet to go check her out. Somehow it's during the weekday. I've either been out of town or ended up missing it. But I'm really happy to see her out and about playing music again.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the other thing about this scene. Like, everyone's getting older. Like, a few years ago, AJ had a heart attack. My friend Will had a stroke.
Bad boy. I mean... Oh, God. He should not have a heart attack at, I don't know, 39 or 40 or whenever he did.
Yeah. He's you know, on this...
I just hope he takes care of himself.
Every once in a while, I do these live shows that are like a live talk show where a guest will come up and then they move down a seat and another guest will come up and everybody talks once everyone's up there. I do them like once a year, twice a year maybe. But I always have AJ on the shows because he can offend everyone, like the audience. One night I asked the audience not to leave. I was like, please don't leave.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Because the thing about him is he's so funny. And he.
It's hilarious.
Once he established how excited I get when he gets super offensive, he just comes out of the gate now, like just completely offensive.
I mean, there's a sweetness to his offensiveness. Yeah. I was so green when I like first met him, right? And. Oh my God. And he knew that I came from a different place, came from a different culture. And sometimes he would say things just to shock me and get that reaction out of me. Right. And his, yeah, he wouldn't stop. So,
yeah, he is a phenomenally special. And so like the reason why what he says is that can be so offensive is so funny to me is because he's got such a kind heart that it's never coming from a bad place. He's just a naughty boy.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
He is, yeah.
And I love that about him.
Yeah.
He's an agent of chaos. He likes to make everything real crazy.
Yes.
And I
yes.
appreciate that.
Yes. I have a soft corner for Mr. AJ Vallejo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody
and I just
does.
Love that
it's
guy.
Funny. Like once you meet him, you know, you really, there's no.
Yeah. Even though he's very capable of driving me crazy sometimes.
Sure.
But yeah. I just love that guy.
That's one of the most beautiful things about him. So tell me a little bit more about Mumbai. Like, it's just like, what is that like?
Mumbai is, you know, the closest. I got nostalgic when I went to New York about Mumbai.
Okay.
So
it's that like a fast, like,
yes.
like noisy.
Yes, and crowded. People are always on the move.
A lot of different smells.
You know, yeah, I grew up in Mumbai. Yes, I grew up in Mumbai. But in some ways, not because I grew up inside an academic campus. My father was a professor of physics.
Oh, okay.
At the Indian Institute of Technology in Bombay.
Jesus.
So, yeah, so you know why I went into physics initially. Well, both him and my brother, they're both physicists. So, yeah.
Not
I thought I was going to do
there.
That too.
Yeah.
There was choice, but somehow I just thought, man, that's
it.
What, yeah, I just followed that, yeah. Before realizing that I didn't exactly have the same passion for physics like they did,
right.
You know. So, but yeah. So the campus itself was very different in that it's unlike Mumbai almost, where it's quieter, a lot of greenery. But outside, and I experienced a lot of this once I started going to my undergrad, you know, college.
Yeah.
Basically, and. And that's just fast-paced. I mean, people in Mumbai are very hardworking and always on the move. You know, I would go in this quote-unquote ladies' compartment train, right? There was some reserved compartments for women. There were very small, limited compartments, but almost an hour and a half commute each way to school. And there would be this working women in saris, going in and coming back. They're basically doing chores for home while they're on their way to work, and they get out and they look as spick and span as they were in the morning.
Wow.
In the evening when you get back in the train, and some of them are sitting and getting started on chores for home, cutting vegetables and whatnot. It's a very hardworking and very I feel like it's, I mean, people have their feet on the ground in Mumbai, you know, and you know, you'll see the stores open early. Like, I'd go to my native place in South India and they would open their stores at 10 or 11. I don't know. I mean, just in that town, I don't want to stereotype anything. But here, 7, first thing in the morning, stores would be open. And it's New York. New York reminds me of Mumbai.
Yeah. Living here in Austin and general sort of American culture, do you find it a little lazier and whinier than... I bet there's not a lot of complaining going on those trains with those ladies that are working from the time they wake up to the time they go to sleep, working jobs, taking care of their family, making dinner, cutting their vegetables on the train.
Yeah,
they're not complaining.
No.
If there's like a too long of a line in the Starbucks drive-thru, you'll never hear the end of it from an American.
One of my colleagues earlier, a couple of years back, he was complaining about the infrastructure in Austin, and we were like, yeah, dude, go to India and look at it and try to drive there. So, no, but you know what? I actually think Americans are very hardworking people.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a very hardworking culture. I mean, even if, I mean, in general, if you look at it, I mean, it's probably has one of the shortest number of or amount of vacation or, you know, actual official days off in the whole world. True. Yeah, and you know, I in some ways, yeah, I traveled for college and all that, but I come here and I was doing I was teaching undergrad labs. That's what supported my grad school here. Uh-huh. And I had students who were basically studying full time and then working restaurant jobs to, you know, I mean, to support themselves. So I didn't have to do that. My parents supported me. And if I were sitting in India going to school or something, I would still be living with them.
Yeah.
They would still be supporting me through school until I got independent or in their world got married, basically, you know. So
are you married?
No, I'm not.
Do they worry about that?
Yeah, I think they must have given up at this point. But yeah, you know, we still have arranged marriages in India. And it's not necessarily the only way now. But yeah, I mean.
There's a lady who wrote a book about that.
And
she was on Fresh Air. And it was over the last couple of years. But I heard an interview with her on NPR show Fresh Air.
What was it about?
It was about how arranged marriages weren't so bad. That there's this Western, that the Eastern style of love is you learn to accept someone and love them as life goes on. I'm not saying it goes right all the time.
No.
But that makes sense. And sort of the Western way of falling in love is it's these fireworks at the beginning, you just detach as time goes on, as opposed to grow in love with a person. It's like when you buy a new car and you drive it off the lot, it starts depreciating in value. That's what American, so much American, but sort of the Western idea of love is like these fireworks at the beginning and all this thing. And this is like, you don't sometimes know the person you're going to marry.
Yeah.
And then you're married to them and you got to get to know them.
Gosh, I mean, I've known people like just a couple of years older than me who have actually got married like either... Or actually, in my generation, a lot of them who have gotten married, like talking to somebody one time, or one of my friend's brother didn't even see his wife till the day of the marriage. That's a bit of an extreme. And trust me, they're doing fine, you know.
But that's interesting that someone that met someone on their wedding day is doing fine.
Yeah,
it doesn't
doing fine.
Seem that in if you tell an American that they're like, oh my God, that's sick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I am sure the divorce rates in India are going up much more now than they were a generation back.
Right.
So whether it's an arranged marriage or you know, somebody found their partner themselves. But I guess the deal is, well, first of all, you get into it knowing that you're going to make it work.
Yeah.
There's divorcing, especially at least a generation back, was not quite the choice to make.
Right.
It was not on the table almost, you know, so it was very limited.
It's kind of on the table from the get-go.
So first of all that, right? And then, so you're getting into it with the expectation that you're going to make it work.
Yeah.
And I think you also get into it with lower expectations than probably what we have here.
Right.
Right? So there's that. And when parents arrange or whenever it's an arranged marriage, there is some basic matching that automatically happens, right? Because people are marrying within their probably language and even caste and religion and their eating habits. You know, vegetarians would probably marry only the vegetarian folks. So a lot of the fundamentals, I think, already get matched. So...
Yeah. It's like an ancient match.com.
Yeah.
Who all is playing with you at the thing, at the show?
Matt Mueling.
Okay.
On electric, Matt Reed is playing acoustic.
Okay.
Jason McKenzie, percussion.
Uh-huh.
Dorian Colbert on drums.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Played with Dorian myself.
Yeah.
Love that guy. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a thinking man as well. Very smart. He's a professor, right?
He was teaching. I'm not sure if he's still teaching, but he studied psychology. Yeah.
Great drummer, too.
Yeah.
Sorry,
go ahead. Yeah. Dorian has played with me for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's either him or Katie Marie plays with me.
Okay. Here's another thing about Dorian. Like, boy, he's handsome. Right?
He's a good-looking dude.
He's a good-looking dude.
And he gets on stage looking pretty sharp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so sorry, go ahead.
That. Daniel McKenna on bass. And then I will have some guest artists. Some of them we're still finalizing, but Indrajit Banerjee, who played sitar on the album, he'll be there.
Cool.
Then I will have Oliver Rajamani up as a special guest. Ginger Lee is going to do a song with me, and I'm talking to one or two other people.
Cool.
Yet to be decided.
Did you go to that Ginger Lee thing at Stateside? Did you play
Yes, I jumped in. My role was all of 1 minute improv on a song, I think, or 2 minutes, whatever.
I didn't go
But I
that.
Jumped on their last song. I did a little bit of improvisational vocals on one of her songs called Charge Laughing on her album. So I just went and did that yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So your record comes out on January 15th, right?
Yes.
Okay, so it's called Immersion, January 15th, 2019, produced by John Neese. Is that how you say it?
It's been engineered by
John Neese.
Engineered
by John Neese, produced by Don Harvey.
And myself, And it's been mastered by Ben Lienbach. He's a producer and engineer in California.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So people can find that. They can go to nagavali.com.
Or the One World Theater site.
Or the One World Theater site.
.org, yeah.
Yeah. I like to send them to one place.
Nagavali.com then.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. So nagavali.com is there anything I'm missing? I'm sure there's tons I'm missing, but are we caught up in this?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's a great start.
It's been nice talking to you.
I'm
glad I finally got to meet you.
Same here.
And I want to come to this show and see this live and be in the thing.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, I'm very glad that you're here in Austin, and I'm very, very glad that you make music. Thank you, Tyler and Juice Consulting, for reaching out and hipping me to Nagavali, because it's really made me very happy to know that this is available for me to go see in person.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah.
And it's, of course, I see it as an honor and a privilege.
Yeah.
To write and play music.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing the show.
Thank you.
Awesome. Oh, that was great.
Jeene re jeene chadariya jeene re jeene.
That is Nagavali. What an amazing artist, man. Her album Immersion drops January 15th, 2019. First record we're talking about of the new year. Release show Sunday, January 20th at One World Theater. Doors are at 6:30. Show is at 7. Go to nagavali.com for all of your Nagavali needs. I really enjoyed my conversation with her. And let me tell you something. Immersion, as a whole album, is absolutely fantastic. It's recorded as one track. They did manage to edit that one song, the single that you've been hearing so far, and you'll hear the rest of it on out as a single. And they edited that. That's great. But listening to it as a whole piece is absolutely beautiful. Congratulations, Nagavali. Great job. And also John Neese and Don Harvey. Great job, guys. Nagavali.com is where you want to go. Immersion comes out January 15th, 2019. Her release show, Sunday, January 20th at One World Theater. Go to Nagavali.com for all of your Nagavali needs. So that's it, gang. That's it. 2018 is over. Next show will come out January 1st, 2019. So, man, have a great New Year's. Be safe. Have fun. Say goodbye to 2018. Let's make 2019 great. Let's hear some more music from Nagavali to take us out of the year. Happy New Year, gang. Talk to you soon. Let's get down.
Jeannie Chadet.